Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hey guys, this is Rick, and welcome to Affair Recovery Radio tonight. We have a very special treat this evening. We've got Dr. Mark Glaser with us, my friend, and he is just an amazing author. Many of you have read his books. We've actually referred many of you to his books, and we use his materials all the time. And so we thought it would be a great opportunity just to have him on air so that he could actually share, I guess, literally from the horse's mouth rather than having to go and read his stuff in black and white. So we've got him here. Mark, are you online?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight. What a blessing to hear you.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thanks for all the work in the past.
Well, I'll tell you what, your work has just been an absolute mainstay for what we've done here. So without you, we really wouldn't have a whole lot to do over on this end. So we certainly appreciate all that you've done for us. And for those of you who may be listening in tonight and not familiar with Dr. Glaser, he's written several books, Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction, The Life Guide for Men, Open Hearts, Renewing Relationships with Recovery, Romance and Reality, Pornography Trap, Setting Pastors and Lay People Free from Sexual Addiction, Freedom Begins Here Workbooks, Talking to Your Kids About Sex. Did I leave anything out?
I think that's plenty.
Well, I've really you have really been instrumental, Mark, in training a lot of people, and I think helping a lot of people through the years. And I know that God has really used your story. In fact, I thought maybe a place to start this evening would just be to kind of share how you got to this place where you began writing on this topic, and how God brought you right here, if you don't mind.
Oh, that's no problem at all. Glad to tell my story, because I think people can heal when we are willing to tell our stories. I think if one person is willing to tell a story, it helps another person feel safe to tell their story. So I've always been a big believer that that's an important thing to do. So my story really begins with the fact that first of all, I'm a pastor's son, and, like the Bible says, the sins of the father are passed down from one generation to the next, to the, third, fourth, and fifth generation. And I think my father, who was a pastor, struggled with sexual addiction most of his life. And, that obviously affected me and the home in, ways that I don't think I need to go into great detail. But I started stealing pornographic magazines when I was 11 years old, and as a Christian, tried to give it up a number of times throughout my, Christian walk. I thought that, marriage was going to heal me of all lust, and while, marriage was great and sexuality was fine, that didn't happen. So now I was pretty stuck with, my lust and pornography and other forms of sexual acting out, which, over the years, the first 15 years of our marriage just continued to increase and get worse. I was involved in a variety of different sexual activities. I can go into detail if you want, but, it was just a lot of different things. And finally, in 1987, I was intervened on by a group of people that had found out about one of the sinful relationships that I was having with another woman. And that led to me going to treatment at a hospital program, and that was in 1987, and I've been sober since that time, about 21 years now, actually. And, you know, like a lot of people that I think have been freed from addiction or, you know, gone through recovery, I gravitated back toward working in the field. I was interested in helping other men. I was interested in helping other pastors like myself. I had become ordained also as a pastor. And that's really what started it. God was in it the whole time, I mean, in terms of just bringing opportunities and plopping them in my lap. And that's what led to my first book, the one you mentioned, called Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction. So that's the brief story, Rick. If you want more details, I can give them to you.
Wasn't the name of that book Faithful and True, is that right?
Well, you know, that book's had an interesting journey. When it was first published in 1992, the publisher, Zondervan, gave it the title Secret Sins.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I read it when it was Secret Sins.
Yeah, well, if you have a copy of that, you might be able to sell it on eBay or something.
Okay, I still got my copy.
Well, I think, what, you know, it's a little unfair. What a lot of people don't realize is that that book, which is now about 16 years old, was originally titled The Secret Sin, and then Gary Smalley called me one day in, I don't know, 94, 95, and said that he thought it was a great book, but, you know, the title was a little bit hard for people to, you know, just to pick up and read, and so he challenged Zondervan to retitle it, which they did, and it was called, at that point, Faithful and True. He thought that was a little bit more generic and, you know, men would have an easier time carrying it around. And then finally, in about 2004, Zondervan decided that, you know, the time was right, culture was ready, and the church was ready for it to be called, you know, what it really was about, which was about sexual addiction. So I revised it, I added some new stuff, and then that's when it came to be called Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction.
Well, I'm glad it finally got out there. And
yeah.
I haven't even announced the telephone number. But if you don't mind, I'd like to invite people to call in. We've actually got a caller because they knew you were going to be on tonight.
Oh,
but
okay.
If anybody would like to call the program and talk with Mark tonight, we're at area code 512-637-9673. That's 512-637-9673. It's hard for me to do that. I'm dyslexic, so it gets backwards sometimes. I'm trying to be careful. But we have Rob on the line from Hutto. Do you know where Hutto is, Mark?
I assume it's near Austin. I don't know. No.
Yeah, it is. That's the Hutto Hippos. They're an interesting crew over there.
Okay.
Rob, welcome to A Fair Recovery Radio. Do you have a question for Mark or a comment?
Yeah. I guess my question is, I was divorced, remarried, and came across a website that has been kind of, I don't know, I guess just going inside of myself worrying and saying that if you remarry, you're committing adultery. And I actually found several websites saying that. So, and I've had a lot of people telling me the opposite, and I just wanted to get another opinion.
Mark, do you mind trying to handle that one?
Well, you know, I think that's a deep theological question that has divided people all during the centuries of the church. But, you know, Jesus is fairly clear in Matthew 5 there that, you know, there are reasons that we can be divorced, the main one, the only one really being for the purpose or for the fact that, you know, someone has been unfaithful, someone has committed adultery. And so I, you know, without knowing any more details of the situation, you know, divorce I think is permitted in cases where there's been unfaithfulness on either, you know, the husband or the wife. I, you know, it's my interpretation. And I, you know, we, you know, in our ministry try to work as hard as we can to try to keep couples together. But in those situations where, you know, one or both are just not willing to do the hard spiritual work that it takes, divorce sometimes happens. My own beliefs and opinion is, you know, not too hard on those who have been divorced and remarried. I believe that God can certainly be in a second marriage or a third marriage as long as we're seeking Him and trying to find the, you know, the person that He has in mind for us. So I don't know, Rick. I'm dancing around the question a little bit, but how about you? How would you answer that one?
I think the way I would answer that is we have a God of grace, and I think that you do as good as you can. You know, I think, again, without knowing more information, Rob, and I don't know, since we've got Dr. Laser on tonight to talk more about sexual addiction, maybe you could email in, and I could also just maybe write an email response to you if that would be helpful for you.
Sure, I could do that. What's the email address?
Why don't you write me at rick@hope-now.com.
Hang on, I'm sorry, my pen just stopped. It was Rick.
rick@hope-now.com.
Hope-now.com.
That's it.
Okay.
And
okay.
I'll see if I can help you out with that a little bit, all right?
Okay. I can give you more details and go into that. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, we'll be praying for you, Rob.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, all right.
Bye-bye. Okay. So in terms of recovery from sexual addiction, Mark, what are the steps that you propose to the people that work with you?
Well, I think you know, the first step for anybody seeking to recover from an addiction is, you know, first of all, to admit the fact that they are struggling with an addiction or struggling with sinful behavior that they just can't seem to control on their own. So we certainly like to see people who are, you know, broken, not arrogant, in other words, in terms of thinking that they can solve it on their own, willing to get the help that they need, and certainly willing also to confess the exact nature of their problem, their sins, their behaviors. Obviously, James 5:16, for example, says, if anyone among you is sick, you know, then gather the elders, confess your sins. So recovery really starts with being honest, you know, talking, stating your needs, getting help, those kinds of things. If, you know, I've got a person who is in that place, then we're going to hopefully try to get them into some kind of a accountability group that can be a matter of maybe 5 to 10 men, whether it's one of the 12-step groups or some other kind of church-based, Christ-centered group, so that, you know, again, recognizing that you can't do this on your own, you're going to need other men to, and I work only with men, I guess I should have said that, but you're going to need other men that are standing with you. You need to be making phone calls, need to be going to those support group meetings and stuff like that. Some of the people that we work with, Rick, have, you know, fairly profound woundedness in their life from the past. They've got stress, got relationship issues. So, you know, all cases, you know, we take on a case-by-case basis in terms of, you know, do we need to provide them with one-on-one Christian counseling? Sometimes we put them in a therapy group, again, with other men. Sometimes we need to bring the spouse in so that we can work with her, and then work with the two of them as a couple. And you know, it's a journey that's going to take a year or two before we really feel that the recovery is in a solid place and going well.
So one of the things you talked about, Mark, and we encourage our people to do this, is the phone calls. When you're talking to your guys, how do you explain the necessity for those phone calls?
Well, sometimes it's like Alcoholics Anonymous said years ago. They have hundreds of slogans, you know, which I like. One of them is "Our own best thinking is what got us here."
Right.
So, if you're kind of sitting around and you're getting tempted, you can be sure of the fact that you're going to talk yourself into some fairly crazy places. And I think that's where phone calls come in. I mean, you call somebody in your support group. Maybe you have a sponsor, you know, one particular individual that you talk to just about every day, if not every day. And, you know, just sometimes hearing another voice brings you back to reality, or that other voice is going to give you a more objective opinion than the one you've given yourself.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, more often than not, it's just the very act of doing. it kind of brings you back to what reality is, what your commitments are, what your vision is, you know, for being a sober person. And I encourage the men, particularly in the first months, to make at least 3 to 4 calls a day. And the reason that I want them to be calling like morning, noon, and night is, you know, 9 out of 10 times they may not need the call. But if they're in the habit of making those calls, that 10th time when they do, it's going to be automatic that, you know, they're just scheduled or programmed to make it. The other thing that it does, when you start making calls in a support group situation, then other guys are going to be calling you. So you never know. I mean, there's going to be that time when, you know, you're kind of on the verge or you're kind of on the edge. And then, you know, I see it happen, and I think God is in this, where you're going to get a call from somebody else, you know, at the exact time that you need to be interrupted, so to speak. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that really helped and helps me, because I make phone calls still to this day.
Yeah, me too.
And they're real important to me. But it really helps with my shame.
Because,
you know, it's like having someone that just says, I hear you, not judging me. I mean, reminding me that my temptations don't define me. That's not who I am. Man, that is just powerful for me.
Well, that's exactly right. I think you're exactly right. And to hear another voice that's gentle, and I want them to be confronted if I'm thinking something stupid. But on the other hand, I mean, they can always remind me of God's grace and love, and just the fact that they're willing to talk to me at any given time, that's very powerful.
Well, and I've also found that that phone call, whatever the allure of that temptation, it always feels a little bit less when I expose it to the light, so that's helpful.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, I love that passage in 1 John 1, you know, bringing it to the light changes things pretty radically for you.
Yep, that is for sure.
So when you're working with the hurt spouse, or maybe Deb, or however y'all work with the hurt spouse through your program over there,
mm-hmm.
How do you explain to them kind of that, do you try to help lay out for them kind of how you see program needing to be for their mate, and hoping, how do you get their support in all of that?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's not uncommon, as I'm sure you know, Rick, that the first call may be from the spouse. I wish I could say that the majority of men that come to work with me come because, you know, they recognized one day that they're out of control and they reached out for support. It's probably more common for the spouse to have discovered it, discover the acting out some way, shape, or form, and for her to make the call. So at that point, you know, my wife Debbie is going to be talking to them and encouraging them. And so we're going to work with the spouse pretty much in many of the same ways we do with the men. We're going to offer them one-on-one counseling, group support. And then obviously we're going to invite them into marriage counseling because of the damage that the sexual sin has done. We need to work on the marriage. So believe it or not, I think it's easier on the front end to get the wives involved. But then over time, it's harder to keep them involved. Which is an interesting dynamic.
Do you think they come to the place, at least I've seen this, where sometimes they begin to go, well, this is kind of your problem, not mine?
Yeah, exactly. And Debbie's new book addresses this. I don't know if you've seen it yet. This came out a couple of months ago, called Shattered Vows, but it's basically all about Debbie's journey in recovery through, you know, our story with me and working with hundreds of wives. But yeah, I think it's a very common temptation for the wives to basically think that it's the husband's sin, the husband's problem, and you go get the help you need or get fixed, and then we'll be fine. And I think that's a very dangerous way of looking at it. I think we're all of us, you know, being the inheritors of original sin, you know, all of us have some kind of issues in our life, ways that we cope, maybe even some unmanageable ways that we cope. And we know that the couples that do the best are the couples in which the wives, you know, look at themselves as being companions in the journey,
right?
Spiritually, you know, with their husbands.
Yeah, I find that to be absolutely true. And if you don't mind making a shameless plug for Debbie's book, can you give us the details of how we can find that?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, we're having a, well, first of all, I mean, it's, you can buy it online. I mean, Amazon.com. You can go to our website if you want to get that later. We would like to think it's in the Christian bookstores. I think in some cases it is. It's supposed to be in, you know, the big bookstores like Barnes & Noble or Borders.
Is Zondervan publishing that one?
Zondervan is the publisher. That's
okay.
Right. Yeah, and it's called Shattered Vows and Healing from Your Husband's Sexual Betrayal. It's the subtitle. And we're getting a lot of, Debbie's getting a lot of great reaction to it. That I think a lot of the books, you know, that have been out there for wives in the past have, you know, not necessarily had a lot of hope. You know, they've been fairly good at recognizing how much damage this does, how painful it is, how angry the women are, and stuff like that. They've been fairly good at recognizing that even a husband who is looking at pornography and that's all he's doing, you know, that's still, you know, a major league problem. But I think Debbie's is really the first book to walk them through the journey and show them that, you know, this can be an opportunity to grow closer as a couple. This can be an opportunity for the wives to work on themselves and their relationship with God. And basically, you know, obviously she's an example of a woman who stayed, a woman who decided to work on our relationship, and a woman who decided to work on herself. And so that's the number one reaction we're getting. You know, there's a lot of hope in this book. And so if there's any, you know, women out there that have been listening and they know their husbands are involved in things, I'd highly recommend that it would be a blessing for you to pick it up. How's that for a shameless plug?
That was a really good plug there, you know. Guys, Deb is an amazing woman, and I really would certainly encourage you to get that book and read it, because as in those of you who know us know that our approach is very much working with you as couples, and feel like that it is a couple's journey, and it's the place, it's God's greatest story of redemption. I mean, it's the place where you both stand the best chance, I think, for the best growth. So you certainly will not go wrong getting anything that Mark or Deb have published. You can't go wrong. I mean, they're very, very good. So, Mark, another question I had. So you start off and you have the guys begin to make phone calls. You get them in a men's group. Do you recommend groups besides groups that you're running? What types of groups do you normally refer your guys to?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, we run therapy groups at our center, and, you know, that's not a fit for everybody because they may not have the deep issues that need to be worked on in that way. My approach has always been, Rick, you know, it's so varied from various places in the country. I think Austin has been, you know, a really good place to have some good support groups there. But, you know, there are the 12-step fellowships, Sexaholics Anonymous, SA, SAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous, and so forth. I think almost, you know, when it comes to the 12-step fellowships, you have to kind of almost shop around a little bit and make sure that the men that are going to the groups wherever you live are, you know, dedicated to a Christian definition of sobriety. You know, you can sometimes run into some of those 12-step groups where, you know, there's men there that are not necessarily practicing what I think you and I would accept as a Christian ethic.
Right, exactly.
So you've got to be a little bit careful with that. I've been really blessed to see over the last, I think maybe 10 or 15 years, that there have been some ministries and so forth that have set up Christ-centered support groups. Some of them could be, you know, 12-step based, but, you know, clearly identifying, you know, Jesus as, you know, our higher power. We, you know, our ministry has a couple of different workbooks that we've put out over the years. We're partners with Life Ministry in Florida that has put out the Life Guide for Men.
Mm-hmm.
And those are intended to be church-based, Christ-centered support groups. So, you know, you have to really look in your area, talk to your pastor, talk to a therapist, call a ministry like yours, and say, you know, where are, you know, the support groups that we would recommend. And then I think you have to go and kind of agree with yourself to go at least 4 to 6 times and see whether you feel like it's the group has a lot of sobriety. That's one thing you'd like to see.
Right.
There's men there that have long-term sobriety, and that there's men there that are honoring God, you know, that kind of thing.
So, which reminds me, I was seeing something on the web the other day, The Freedom Begins Here.
Uh-huh, okay.
And is that, I'm not quite sure when I was reading it, are y'all doing kind of a tour nationally, or are people going around speaking and working with that? What's happening with that particular movement, the Freedom Begins Here thing?
Are you talking about the Freedom Every Day, you know, the Life Ministry group?
Yeah, out. I just saw something, and it looked like he was using some of your stuff with Gary Smalley. I just saw that your book was being promoted. So,
oh, good. Well, to be honest, I'm not exactly sure.
Well, you got some good publicity happening for you, Mark. Let me send you to their website.
Yeah, maybe you should email me that website.
I'll send you the link because they're using your materials.
Well, that's not the first time that would have happened, Rick, where, you know, we find out from somebody else that they went to some event and, you know, whatever, and they were promoting our stuff. One of the great shocks in my life, you know, from time to time is if, you know, I Google my own name and, you know, find out the various websites that have my stuff on it, which is, you know, a great honor and blessing. But I have, you know, enough ADD myself that I don't always do a good job keeping track of all that stuff.
Well, I understand. Well, you just, that's good news for the night. You just found out that your stuff is being promoted on the web by another group. And so I think they're doing a good job of trying to get the word out about sexual addiction into churches, which I think, you know, I always applaud when people will sit there and start talking about the issue and just because it's such, you know, it just destroys so many homes.
Yeah,
and so many marriages, so I think it's great.
Well, I think it's a, you know, it's really a new day, Rick, that, you know, when I first got involved in the field back in the late 80s, the church was real reticent to talk about these things, and very gradually God's been moving and opening the doors and shedding light on this, and the article that appeared in Christianity Today a couple of months ago, the cover article was about sexual addiction. So when Christianity Today, you know, which is a fairly, you know, big magazine in the Christian world, when they can publish a cover article about it, I think that's a kind of a symptom that the church is getting more open to these kinds of things. Sex has just not historically been talked about that much by the church. More and more, we're hearing stories of, you know, pastors who are sharing about this from the pulpit. Even a few cases of pastors who are, you know, have shared their own struggles, and I think that's really great. I think that's wonderful.
Well, I think it is too. I was speaking at a large pastors' conference recently about sexual addiction and shared my story. And we're at the point now in a new age where people actually talk to me afterwards and be seen with me publicly. So that's a good sign.
I've had that. I'll tell you my favorite story. Back in 92, 93, when my first book had just come out, The Secret Sin, we were talking about that earlier, I was at some conference in Cincinnati, and I was talking about sexual addiction, and they decided to have a book signing, and they decided to put me right next to John Townsend, who had just published the book Boundaries, which, you know, is a great book, and but a whole lot less problematical for people.
Exactly.
To pick up. So, you know, he had people lined out the door to, you know, to get signed copies of Boundaries, and I don't think I had anybody come up to me. And John bugs me about that every time I see him.
Yeah, it's all in the topic.
It's all in the topic. Yeah. Well, you know, the common thing is, if I'm speaking and you come up to me afterwards, does that mean that you've got a problem with sexual addiction? And so I try to say to the audience, you know, look, can we have an agreement that if you want to come up afterwards and ask me a question, you know, everybody else, just please know that doesn't necessarily mean that you're a sex addict or your spouse is a sex addict.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Somebody said, you know, I'm the only person in town nobody ever wants to be seen having lunch with.
Well, that's that affects us at church, you know, because when we go to church and, you know, people know now, you know, we get the Christianity Today article, or we did, you know, one of the secular media pieces like Dateline a couple of years ago, you know, people really know that that's who we are and that's what our ministry does. So, you know, the church coffee hour can be a kind of a lonely time for us.
Yeah, it can, but God is good. So what are some of the other major pieces you think are important in terms of getting well?
Well, I think there's a number of different factors. One of the things that's really exciting me lately is the work that we're doing about how to take every thought captive. That's, you know, 2 Corinthians 10:5. And, you know, there's so many different opinions about, you know, how to interrupt a thought life when you're having lustful thoughts. And we're really, you know, starting to see more and more that, you know, lust comes out of a certain loneliness in your soul. And if you can listen to your fantasies even, and kind of like if you take a prisoner captive, you would interrogate them. So if you take your fantasies captive, you interrogate them. And I think the question to ask them is, you know, what are you trying to tell me about where I'm lonely, where I'm stressed, you know, where I have issues that I need to take to the Lord? So we're seeing a lot of really positive results with men who are kind of accepting that their lust is not the problem. It's the emotional and spiritual issues underneath the lust that is the problem. So that's one thing that I'm kind of excited about.
Yeah, I heard you speak probably in the mid-90s at a conference, and you were talking about the whole fantasy aspect, just how that's sort of the window to the soul. I mean, if you want to get down to where the wound is, right. How that reveals that, and that's really been a useful piece for me through the years. So,
I appreciate that. I mean, that's one of the things I'm excited about. I mentioned earlier that, you know, I have ADD. What we're finding is that about half or more of the men, somewhere between a half and two-thirds of the men that really struggle with, you know, a deep case of sexual addiction, you know, they are men who have attention issues. They're bored. It's kind of like what we used to call type A behavior. They are impatient. They're rushed. They're got a low level of anger going. They need lots and lots of stimulation. So we're finding out that if we can help the men with knowing how to channel, you know, the various energies that they have with those problems into productive and creative activity, you know, maybe even get them medical help for ADD, you know, that's really an important piece. You know, I think the main thing to know is that sexual addiction is not some kind of a single, you know, magic bullet type problem that we can find, and, you know, when we get a hold of that, you know, the guy's going to be fine. In any one case, there's usually multiple factors that we have to address.
Right, and so when you've got somebody then, like one of those factors of a soul wound, just a damage maybe from abuse in their own childhood, then you handle that more or less back, hopefully through group work or through individual work, trying to help them come to healing in that. So, because that may be the thing that's driving the lust, then, is what you're saying.
Well, that's you know, often the case. You know, I say the old days for me, or, you know, 20 years ago, we knew that about 80% of the men were sexually abused as children. About three-quarters of them, 75%, were physically abused as children, and a lot of emotional abuse, and then I think even some spiritual abuse. So there's just a lot of, you know, wounded messages about who they are. It leads to that shame you were talking about earlier, that I'm a bad and worthless person because, you know, these things happen to me. And so we've got to bring that kind of woundedness to the Lord and, you know, help the men heal that and know the truth about who they really are in Christ and that kind of thing. One of the interesting things, Rick, you know, in the last 10 years or more since the Internet really evolved, we're seeing, you know, that a lot of the men that are getting sucked and seduced into the Internet, you know, don't always have that same level of woundedness. And so, you know, that's produced some interesting challenges just in, you know, and in those situations, you know, those are the men that we've really got to help find other more creative ways to deal with, you know, their boredom and their needs for stimulation. I mean, we're living in a culture that is so overly saturated with stimulation that that's really one of the dangers we're up against.
Right. I find that, you know, the whole boredom aspect is really, in fact, I'm thinking of a case I've got right now I'd love some consultation on, but that's exactly the issue. And so you just actually gave me an idea of something I need to pursue with that particular case. So thank you.
That's good.
Well, I just think I hadn't even considered the ADD aspect with him, but I think that may be a piece of what we're dealing with. So,
well, you know, it's interesting that, and I think, you know, if there are any parents out there listening, one of the challenges that I think parents have is kids these days with computer games, handheld computer games, you know, internet stuff, TV. We're raising generations of kids now who, you know, are so used to being stimulated that some of the research has shown that actually the incidence of ADD is increasing because of the kids just, you know, their brains are getting trained to need that much stimulation. And there was a study in the Journal of Pediatrics that showed that for every hour a kid watches television, he's 10% more likely to develop attention deficit. So, you know, we've really got to be creative and help our kids know how to find, you know, healthy stimulation and use their creativity in healthy ways. And otherwise, you know, we're kind of predisposing them to, you know, looking for stimulation, and that can turn to sinful ways when they're adults.
Right. It's interesting. I find that the problem with children is just exploding. So, and totally off topic, but what do you? I know you've written a book on talking to your kids about sex. What do you suggest parents say to their children, Mark, if they find out they've been on the internet looking at porn?
Well, that's increasingly the nature of a lot of the calls that we're getting. You know, and it's incredibly sad. You know, we've seen cases of kids that are hooked into internet pornography as early as age 5. So certainly by age 9, 10, 11, 12, you know, we've got some huge things going on. I think it's all part of a much larger conversation that parents need to have in an ongoing way with their children. I think we need to start early. And, well, let me back up for a minute. I think the one thing for parents to realize is that that old notion that you have that one-time conversation with your child at whatever age about sexuality, you've got to, you know, get to a place where you recognize that these days, you know, with all of the sexual stimuli that are out there in culture, the conversation about sex has got to be an ongoing one, not one large conversation, but lots and lots of small ones.
Right.
And another, I think, challenge to the church is to help our kids know what God's design for healthy sexuality is all about. We've got to teach that, model that, and help them know that there are alternatives to the message that culture is portraying in so many places. If a parent, you know, is encountering a kid that, you know, is has been exposed to internet pornography, you know, for sure I think they need to sit down with them. And when we say the word normalize, you know, it sometimes sounds a little strange, but I think you need to help the kid know that they're not weird, they're not a freak, they're not, you know, bad or sinful because they've done that, or, you know, in many cases been accidentally exposed to it, that, you know, a lot of people, you know, struggle with this, or it's very common out there these days for that to happen. And then I think parents need to walk almost like accountability partners would, you know, with their children to make sure that there's, you know, blocks on the internet, there's accountability software, the computer is always in a public place, not a private place. And, again, just having the ongoing conversation so that the kid can be open and honest with, you know, whatever stresses or, you know, whatever loneliness they've got going. So it's a huge, large question, Rick. And I would say this, that, you know, we need more people writing about this, researching this, and we need more books for kids and teenagers and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think that one of the things that we've been really pressing hard is, you know, what's the right message to give kids? Because I think without that, telling people what not to do, according to Romans 7, just kind of creates a bit of the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think you've got to be able to tell them what you really, what they need to be doing. And I hope that that message gets out in a much stronger way in the near future, because to me, that's a large part of the solution to this deal.
Yeah, I was really slapped in the face with that. It was in Texas. I was speaking at Abilene Christian University.
That's where I graduated from.
Oh, really? You're an ACU guy.
You bet.
Well, congratulations. That's a great school. They invited me down to speak to chapel, and before they did, they had a meeting of the various student leaders from the various organizations on campus, and I thought it was just going to be some session where they got to ask me questions, but they really had a lot to say, and the main thing they had to say was, you know, we hope you're not here today to tell us what not to do. Our parents and our teachers and our pastors have been telling us that, you know, all of our lives. What we need to know is what we are supposed to do, you know. How do we use this sexual energy in healthy ways? And, you know, how do we channel that? How do we create a vision for ourselves of what marriage is going to be? And I, you know, there's been a lot of work, you know, in the teenage college populations. You know, it's led to some movements, you know, such as, you know, kiss dating goodbye and all that kind of stuff. But I think we need healthier solutions to that. You know, you're right. You know, Romans 7, is it 15, where Paul talks about the good, the bad that I, you know, do, I don't, the stuff that I don't want to do, I do, but the good that I want to do, I don't do. We've got to be talking to the kids about the good that they're supposed to be doing.
Right. I mean, I think even one of the things I tried to work with my son on a great deal was, you know, how do you look at women, not how do you not look at women.
Exactly.
And that message just isn't out there very much, but...
Well, how do you be friends with, you know, women? Because the kids are doing such a better job today of hanging out with each other. I think, you know, it's more likely today for teenagers to have, you know, lots of friends of the opposite sex. That's a great thing. You know, how do you be friends? How do you be friends without letting your sexual energies take over? How do you define the relationship? How do you date in a morally responsible way? How do you set up boundaries on dating? You know, all of those are just incredibly important questions.
Okay, I believe we've got another caller. It's been a little slow tonight. Normally we have lots of calls, but I'm glad I wanted to talk with you anyway, so this is fine. Are you here?
It's Jorge.
Jorge, excuse me, Jorge. Are you with us?
Yes, appreciate the topic. I think it's a pretty common one, actually. I was first diagnosed as an addict way back when I worked for the post office. I would always call in sick, saying I was, you know, hungover or whatever. So they had an in-house alcohol and drug program, and they forced me to go to a meeting once a week and learned about the Blue Book and basically the Alcoholic Anonymous regime. But I was very... interested to learn that one becomes an addict the moment you fall in love with something or someone. It could be chocolate, it could be a person, it could be drugs, TV show. You become an addict at that point. It's just that innocent. And so by that definition, I think most people are sex addicts. I don't know anybody that doesn't like it. I'm sure there's maybe a 1% or a small minority of people who do not have not fallen in love with the sensation of the pleasure of sex. And I certainly am guilty of that, still suffer from it to this very day, of being a sex addict and also a chocolate addict and addicted to a lot of things. But I took Jesus's advice when he said, actually I took it before I even knew Jesus, but Jesus said, be hot or cold. I always found that interesting once I became a Christian, that he didn't say, he didn't say, just do what I say and never sin or forget about evil. He said, be hot or cold, which I still find shocking. I was hot for sin. I went for it, man. I was cold to religion and morality, and followed my sex addiction to women and situations. And I know now, having gone through that, why the Bible tells us to do a certain lifestyle and stay away from certain things because you will get burned. I know that like no advisor, no book, no counselor can tell me because I learned firsthand, and I have been burned, you know, terribly. And so even though I'm a sex addict now, when the temptations still occur, it's easy for me to self-talk and say,
"So Jorge,
do you want to go through that again? Do you really want to, that the pain of every kind, financial, emotional, mental, and certainly spiritual, that can occur when you disobey God?"
So, Jorge, do you have a question for Dr. Laser?
Well, I don't think I have a question. I just wanted to share with you that we do have to talk to ourselves, to talk ourselves out. I haven't read his book, obviously, but I know of no other solution than to say to myself, you know, this is going to cost you not only, you know, hellfire when you die, but here on earth, when you disobey God, there's going to be a price to pay. And I just wanted to share that with all the other sex addicts out there. It's momentary pleasure, but you will pay radically. And
so, do you,
I'm sorry, I don't have a question.
So,
I just wanted to share my thoughts because it was.
Do you mind if I let Dr. Laser define sexual addiction?
I would love to hear his comments on the subject.
Okay.
Well, you know, first of all, I have another reaction, and that is that I'd be glad to define sexual addiction, but I think that.
Oops. Sorry about that, Mark.
Oh, that's okay.
So you were responding to what Jorge said, so why don't you give your first response again, if you don't mind?
Well, I think one of the main things that his call brought up for me is that the average addict, whether they're an alcoholic or a sex addict, chances are, you know, they may have at least one other addiction. He was saying that, you know, whatever you kind of put into the brain, you know, whether it be, you know, a romantic fantasy or a chocolate or something like that, you know, that, you know, the brain does have it in its pleasure center, you know, the ability to get hooked into a variety of things. We found that 50% of alcoholics roughly also struggle with sex addiction. 50% of sex addicts struggle with alcoholism. So, it's really not uncommon for guys to have multiple addictions, and it does point to the fact that, you know, underneath an addiction, you know, are those emotional and spiritual issues that we do need to address. You were asking me to define sexual addiction. Basically, there's several things that we think of. First of all, I think the addict has to perceive that they've tried to stop and can't. That's what we refer to as unmanageability. And it's always an interesting question as a Christian what unmanageability means, because I think that while most addicts have that perception that they've tried to stop and can't, there's also, I think, a part of them that holds on to the addiction because they like it so much and they don't know what they're going to do without it. I think a lot of Christian addicts, they basically would like God to do all the hard work and remove, and you know, in the case of sexual addiction, the lust from them without having to, you know, do any of the hard emotional and spiritual growing that they need to do. I think a lot of addicts are double-minded. There's James talks about that in the first chapter. There's a part of them that wants to get well and a part of them that doesn't. But, you know, unmanageability is really no different from original sin. I mean, we want to trust God. We're just having a really hard time completely doing that. The second thing that I think this describes an addiction is that it does need to create some kind of a tolerance factor in the brain. An alcoholic is going to need more alcohol to achieve the same effect. The chemistry that's created when you think about sex is an actual neurochemistry in the brain, and I think the brain can become tolerant to that. So if you think about sex once in a while, you're going to think about it more often. If you act out sexually with yourself or others, you know, you're going to need to do it more often to achieve the same effect. The third thing that we think about is that, you know, sex is used to escape or, you know, cope with life in some way. And so if you've got stress or boredom or anger or whatever, you know, sexual acting out is a way that you're actually medicating yourself from those things. So those are some of the classic things we think about. It's kind of that helpless feeling that something has overtaken my life.
Well, and I know we're drawing toward the end of the session tonight, the program. So, Mark, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry we cut you off. Please, everybody listening, get as many books as you can from Mark and Deb. I promise you, you will be blessed because they're very God-centered. They love the Lord. And I think that Mark is probably the leading Christian expert in the sexual addiction field. And so I cannot recommend him high enough to you guys. So please get his materials. Thank you, Mark, for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks so much for all of those good words, Rick, and it's been a pleasure to be on the air, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Well, hopefully I'll see you in San Francisco in July at Smart Marriages. Are you going to be there?
Yeah, I'm planning to be there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, I'll see you then.
Take care, Rick.
Okay. Bye-bye. And I want to announce next week's program. Next week we're going to have Paula Reinhart. Those of you who have worked with Leslie and with me, you've had us recommend her book many times, Strong Women, Soft Hearts. Paula's also got some other great books out now, Sex and the Soul of the Woman, along with Better Than My Dreams. And she's going to be talking about her book. So I certainly hope you'll join us next week. I think you're going to find that Paula is a tremendous blessing. And I pray that God will bless all of you guys in your recovery this coming week. Blessings now.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio through the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, affairrecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. And remember, there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night. God bless.
Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?